Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 5 of the New England Camp Podcast. Today we get into presence, balance, the importance of connection, and how the camp experience ties all those things together. I'll let today's guests introduce themselves here shortly, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation.
All right. Well, this is fun. If you're listening to this, this is episode 3, 4, 5, somewhere in the middle of season 1 of the New England Camp Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. As always, we have a guest with us, and we are excited to chat today with good camp people about good camp stuff and get good camp information out of it. But who is that person? I'm going to let them do their introducing, and as if they were walking up to the campfire and saying, hi, I am so-and-so. So please, today, would you introduce yourself, guest?
Sure. Thanks for having me, bud. My nickname is Misa, M-I-S-A, and my full name is Melissa Galazzi, and I obviously have Italian heritage, and I am thrilled to be here. I have a 57-year relationship with camp, and so I'm excited to talk about kind of all of the twists and turns of nearly 6 decades of loving camp and being part of camp.
Having a nickname like Misa, or like having a name that has some sort of heritage behind it, I'm so afraid of butchering it. So it is Misa. Misa. Okay, not yeah. Misa. I mean, that's a okay. Yeah. I don't know what to do with my hand here. Stop that.
So it's like Lisa with an M. Misa.
I'm not going to screw that up.
Lisa.
And for folks tuning in, one of the reasons, actually, there's 2 reasons why I'm joined by Misa today. When we started the podcast, she reached out and just said like, hey, this is wonderful. I'm so happy you all are doing it. If you ever have questions or want to chat camp, let me know. And that set off a memory for me, because when I started back 5 years ago with ACA New England, my very first conference, you were one of the first people who walked up to me day one and just said, hi. You were actually not walking up to me. You were walking up to Betty Bussell, but you saw me standing there and you were like, this is somebody who I've not seen in my 50 some odd years of camp experience. And so I'm looking forward to this conversation to kind of get behind some of those 50, whatever. What did you say? 57 years of camp experience. So let's start from the beginning then. what is your camp story? What was camp like as a kid for Misa?
Yeah. So my mom was a swim instructor, I guess, at Camp Wind in the Pines, which was a Girl Scout camp in Plymouth. And I think I was maybe less than 18 months old that first summer. And we moved into a camp cabin there. And that was my first summer at camp. I don't really know who took care of me. I think my dad did while she was working. I'm not really sure. And then very quickly, about 2 years later, both my parents were hired by Camp Neshoba Day Camp by Bob Seward and Jean Seward. And Marcia Seward worked for my mom on the waterfront as a young adult. And my mom was head of the waterfront. My dad was one of the middle managers. And so we have a long history with Neshoba Day Camp and overnight camp. And Sarah is basically my age and my brother's age. And the three of us were kind of horse barn rats together. My dad decided that he would leave teaching and build a 31-foot trimaran sailboat in our backyard. And Bob Seward, he built the 2 pontoons in our backyard and then needed a barn for the center pontoon, the center hull. And Bob Seward loaned him one of the camp barns for a year. So my dad built 7 days a week, would go to Neshoba Day Camp and build our boat. And my mom would help him on the weekends. And Sarah and my brother Chris and I would just have camp, Neshoba Day Camp, as our, you know, playground. And we had horses and played. And then we left on the boat, launched it, and lived on a boat for a year that my dad built.
Pause. So my wife, I met at camp as well. She was she still is the maintenance director's daughter. And so she had a similar childhood where she talks about, like, you know, school vacation, days off, you know, going out and kind of being with her dad around camp and having it as a little bit of a playground. But let's get back to the part about the boat. So how old were you when you lived on a boat for a year that your dad built in the barn at Camp Neshoba Day?
So I turned 7 in August. And I did not start 3rd grade in the Chelmsford Public Schools. I started 3rd grade and my brother started 4th grade being boat schooled. And so all of third grade, I was boat schooled, and we sailed the Eastern Seaboard and literally washed ashore on Cape Cod, where my parents were hired by the directors of Pleasant Bay Camp, which is in South Orleans, a sailing camp, co-ed sailing camp, which no longer exists. And we moved off the boat, and that summer I turned 8, my parents were the assistant directors of a wonderful sailing camp. So I spent 5 summers there, and that brought me basically to my mom starting our camp, Brewster Day Camp on Cape Cod, in 1980. She founded an early childhood school year round and then had a summer component. So by then I was 15, and I was one of her first counselors as a CIT. And, you know, an early memory I have was she didn't have t-shirts yet. And so I was learning how to silk screen in my art class at Nauset High School. So I said, well, I'll just silk screen t-shirts. And I did a logo, and I remember completely hanging t-shirts all over the camp office from the rafters to dry one night. And by the morning we had like 50 t-shirts for the kids and the staff. And then I also did camp pennants, hand silk screen camp pennants for many summers. So yes, I'm an artist. I have been an artist since I was able to say, answer the question, what are you going to be when you grow up? And I think I was probably 4. And I said, what do you mean when I grow up? I already am. I'm an artist.
Oh, that's such an that is such an artist answer as well. Yeah. What do you mean when I grow up? I already am. I'm here.
Yeah, I already am.
This is
and
me.
Why do these adults have to make me wait?
Seriously. All right, 2 quick follow-ups on that. A, when you were up and down the Eastern Seaboard on the boat for a year, which we could do an entire other episode just about being boat schooled. That is, see kids, all the hipsters out there who think you're homeschooling and you're new to the game, try boat schooling.
Well, it's like bus schooling. Now people are doing it on buses.
That's exactly. They go find, either a school bus that they've retrofitted or right. These, you know, Mercedes, you know, scooter vans or whatever they're called. What was a spot from your childhood? What was one of those stops up and down the East Coast that really stuck with you over the years?
Oh my gosh, so many. You know, I think that time had a very different quality on the boat. You know, there weren't clocks, And I think that from a very early age, I understood the power of presence and being present and, you know, feeling the wind, seeing the water, you know, noticing what I notice. I'm actually teaching a class online called Notice What You Notice. And I think that was instilled in me in a very young age, you know, being full-time out in nature, the power of nature and the power of, you know, marching to the beat of your own drum, for lack of a better kind of expression, you know, really, really being present for myself and for my family, I think is probably the biggest takeaway. And having agency. I think the biggest thing I learned, you know, my parents created our own curriculum. I mean, we finished our public school curriculum before Halloween. We did a whole year's
one
worth
to one.
Of,
if you, when you're one to one, you can get through that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So we powered through what our friends were doing. And then basically starting November 1st, my parents created our own curriculum. And you know, for math, my mom would make me like make the bread, you know, the week we made saltwater bread, and she would make me like double the recipe and then half it in order to do fractions and all of that. I mean, you know, clever, very useful, practical. So I think the idea that, you know, yes, there's social kind of expectations, though having your own agency and to make your own decisions and create your own path through life. And as an artist, that's been a huge, you know, part of my life is figuring out how to do it all, like how to not do it all, but how to be an artist and, you know, make it work. And camp is a huge part of that. The seasonal aspects of running a camp for many, many, many years created space for me to also pursue my art and raise a family. I have 2 sons who are 24 and 27 next week, and a husband who I've been with for 33 years, and that's not nothing.
No, that is definitely not nothing. I'm 8 years into my 50-year contract. We're going to talk about contract extensions and after 50 years. But when you talk about being present, when you're talking about, you know, really trying to like slow things down, and we try to do that here. You lived that on the boat where you said no clocks. There was sun, there was wind, there was a cadence to the day, and there was an intentionality to every moment. And I do think that that's kind of the role. The next question I had on here, but we're just stumbling, you know, bum backwards into it, is, you know, what role does the camp experience play in modern society, in development? And two of the things that you nailed on it is A, you know, presence. Slow, and I think presence means slowing down. You know, kids are growing up in a world that spins a lot faster than we did. And that's the natural evolution of things. So how do we counter that? We counter that with, you know, opportunities to be present, to take risk, to slow down, to ask questions, to have that kind of camp experience, or go be boat schooled for a year. That sounds dope. But the other half of that was balance. And how do you balance being an artist with, you know, knowing that that is your identity, but that you have other responsibilities or even other kind of, you know, interests that you want to balance that out with. Camp is kind of that way too, where it offers freedom, but it also is balanced with structure. It offers risk, but it does offer an environment where you can take those risks, and it doesn't mean you're not going to get hurt. Doesn't mean you're not going to fall down. I mean, but you are going to do it in an arena where you can feel confident doing so. And I think when you're raised on a, you know, and I'm sure, I love the smile you got on right now for folks who are listening, because you did. That's a unique childhood. That's a unique upbringing. It's really, really freaking cool. But it does give that perspective for where do these kind of experiences fit into modern living. I had, my other question though was, when you were silk screening these T-shirts in the 80s, what would have been on the radio? What would you have been listening to?
Oh my gosh. I have this
image of Kenny Loggins in the background, and you're, cause I just watched Top Gun again after watching Maverick. And so now I'm seeing like Misa with like a bandana on, like Kenny Loggins, but what would it have been?
You know, I have to say, and this is going to sound snarky, but it's not. Whenever I'm making art, I really like to listen to my own breath. I love to listen to my feet walking around. I love to listen to the squeegee, you know, when I was silk screening. So like, this might sound cheesy, but my guess is I had the windows open in the office and it was the sound of crickets. Literally.
That's not cheesy at all. As a matter of fact, that actually just reinforces what we were talking about being present. That's why, I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I stayed at a Holiday Inn once. It wasn't last night, but that's where I think that fits you perfectly to a T. You wanted to be present with the experience. And I think that that does parallel camp as well. We talk about screen-free summers. We talk about, you know, again, being a little uncomfortable, you know, being there in the moment. Listen, I'm silence is not, used to be my enemy. I used to hate it. And I will say, ever since having kids, and I live kind of in a more urban setting now, I enjoy the sounds. I enjoy the car horns, the dump trucks at 4 a.m., you know, those accoutrements. And because when I go to my in-laws up in Maine, they live on a farm in Otisville, Maine. You don't get any more remote than that. And I do love going outside at night and just opening my eyes and seeing nothing but stars. There's not a sound. There might be a wild turkey that's 400, 500, 600 yards away, but it's so quiet that it sounds like it's right next to you. So, I mean, I feel that. I'm vibing with that. No, that's great. So through all these travels, these trials and tribulations, my next question was actually one we already talked about, which is, what are some of the keys that you might have hammered in on? What are some of the tips and tricks to navigating that space? And I really kind of the you know, balancing your camp job in general, but presence was one of the ones that I think I picked up on. But are there any other kind of tips or tricks through that journey, like the role of community or anything like that? Right.
I think, you know, kind of using the boat schooling year as an example, you know, I didn't have any friends that year. You know, I had my mom, my dad, and they were in their early 30s. On that year, my mom turned 30 on the boat. I remember, you know, I was 7. I remember exactly what the card looked like that I made her. And my dad was 32 and my brother was 9. And, you know, I didn't have anyone else. Like, no, I had my Siamese cat, Ichi, who was with us on the boat. But I think I realized kind of painfully, you know, we need people in our lives. We need friends. We need support. And that's why I'm a huge proponent of ACA and mentoring and, you know, getting out, going to conferences, meeting people. And, you know, I do remember meeting you, Bud, and you were standing, you know, next to Betty. You had just been hired. And, you know, this idea of like reaching, you know, I reached my hand out to you and said, hey, Bud, great to have you. Like, obviously you're new here. Awesome. And, you know, I think that because I had a year where I didn't have anyone other than those three people, I really realized how critical human connection is and how critical it is to, you know, push ourselves out of our comfort zone and welcome people into our lives. And you talked about agency. I think that's a huge part of having agency in our own lives is who do I want to connect with and how do I want to connect with them and in what ways and what do I need to attract into my life? And when I was a young camp director, so I worked for about 9 summers as kind of working my way up through Brewster Day Camp, tent counselor and then swim staff. And, you know, before we built our pool, I would hike with the kids into Nickerson State Park, stay at the pond for the morning. Kids would rotate through. I'd teach them swim lessons and I'd walk back with the last group. The following summer, we built a swimming pool and now we use the park and the ponds for our free swims. SWOC. It's free swims off campus.
Ah, okay. But
I don't know where the W comes. Anyway, getting back to
talking about community, just talking about this this community. Idea of being isolated for a year. And you know what's funny is I was talking about balance. And I'm talking about all the benefits of being out there on your own for a year. Cool schooling, mm-hmm. cool this.
Yeah,
and that's balanced out with the isolation challenge.
Real isolation. So I think that I've always sought people in my life. I'm blessed with many, many, many friends of all ages. I have friends who are, you know, 15, 16, 17, and I have friends who are literally in their early 90s and everybody in between. And I think that having friends that are older and younger and in different generations, like I just feel blessed to really learn from the people who are younger than I am and the people who are much older. And then obviously I have a posse of people that are my age going through life kind of, you know, in parallel to me. But when I moved all the way through all the jobs at camp, and then I worked for Putney Student Travel one summer, my mom was crestfallen when I said, Mom, I can't come back to camp. I need to do something else. I can't come back for my 9th summer. And it was like I was, you know, handing her a mud pie to eat. And I said, I'll be back, you know, I'll be back by the time I'm 25. Just give me a little space. And I was hired by Putney Student Travel to lead a bicycle camping trip for 18 high school kids in the Canadian Maritimes. And my co-leader who Putney put me with ended up being my husband. We didn't date that summer. He had a serious girlfriend and we, you know, it took us about 3 years to figure out that we, you know, we needed to be together. So we met as co-leaders and our whole 33 years of marriage is based on sort of equal partnership, each, you know, working together, you know, figuring it out together. So it was sort of, I always say, if you think you're going to marry somebody, go on a 6-week camping trip with them with 18 high school kids. And if you still like each other after that, that's a pretty good bet.
I mean, there is a reason why some camp relationships seem to work out. If you can get through those kind of experiences, whether it's 18 high school kids or not, there's some longevity there.
Yeah. So when I came back, I lived in Chicago with David for the first few years. He was finishing up the PhD program. And then I moved out there for him. The deal was the next career move would be mine. So I got into Rhode Island School of Design for grad school. We moved from Chicago back east. And after grad school, the camp director that my mom had retired, she wanted to work full-time in public school. And my mom called me and said, I'd love to interview you for the job of camp director. And I said, Mom, I've been waiting for this call my entire life. Like I'm thrilled. Let me get my resume together. Let me come drive out to the Cape. Let's have a serious conversation. And I did, you know, sat down with her in her office. And, you know, I really said, I think we have to, you know, really figure out our mother-daughter relationship separate from our boss-employee relationship and keep those lines clean. And we kind of worked all those things out. And so for 21 years, I was her camp director and really quadrupled the size of the program, you know, just grew it slowly over those 21 years. And she passed away 18 months ago. And now I am, 5 years of ovarian cancer. And it was a long, tough road. I have now taken over as CEO and president of the board of the Family Schools Incorporated, which has a year-round early childhood program and Brewster Day Camp. So in the winter, we have about 25 year-round employees, and then we bring on an additional 70 seasonal summer camp employees, and we are on one campus. And to get back to kind of where ACA fit in all of that for me, when I was a new camp director, I was really looking for, okay, who are my support people? How do I navigate this new job? And I know I'm growing. I joined the camp when it was 16 years old as camp director, 16, and now it's 42. And so, you know, I thank you. Bud's clapping for me, silent clapping. I think that early on, I realized I needed more than what my mom could offer. You know, I needed a larger community of mentors and support. And so I really looked into, I had to convince her to allow me to pursue ACA accreditation. Oh, it's so expensive. And why do we need it? And we have so many other accreditations and blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, I need it. I, as a camp director, need ACA accreditation. I need to go through the standards process. I need to have people coming to this campus. And it was actually Lucy Norville, who was the very first person to, and she was on the Cape, and she just stopped by and introduced herself and said, can I just come look? And I was like, yeah. And I gave her a tour, and we were about 10 minutes in, and she just stopped. And I remember we were up on this little hill kind of overlooking the pool, and we were near the, you know, 4 and 5 year olds who were playing sweetly. And she touched my hand and she said, you've created magic here. And I said, oh my gosh. She said, I can see it. You're doing it. And I was like a second year camp director, and to have, you know, Lucy's support, I was so touched. I said, thank you for seeing it. It's such hard work. And she's like, oh yeah, it's such hard work. And then I joined ACA New England, and Pam Crabb from Camp Renoya was the outgoing president of ACA New England board at the time. And I remember receiving my very first newsletter. And this was before the time of the internet. So it came in the mail. It was paper. And I remember it was like May of my second year being a camp director. And Pam's letter was, the mighty month of May, as camp directors, we're adding more things to our to-do list than we can possibly cross off. And she just went on about her experience of the month of May. And I was like, oh my God, this is what I'm feeling right now. This woman understands what I'm going through. Who is she? You know, and then I realized, oh, there's a whole network of people that I can't see or touch, though they're all going through what I'm going through. And that's when I really, I mean, it even gives me goosebumps now to even mention it, because I feel like I'm such a proponent of human connections, and that's what my artwork is about. And that's what camp is about. And so I feel like ACA has its finger on the pulse of kind of the material of those human connections. And so going to the conference and also seeking out mentors and mentees and giving back, as well as, you know, giving back to people who are brand new, like when I reached out and shook your hand. And, you know, I think that it's our camp duty to pay it forward, pay it back. And that's how this whole system works, you know?
I love that. That it is your camp duty to pay it forward. And it's funny. You mentioned Lucy Norville. She's back in the camp world. She's up with me in summer camps now. And the reason I bring that up too, is because thank you so much for the kind words and where ACA New England kind of, you know, fit into your story. And we were able to be part of your experience. And if anybody's listening to this, odds are you're probably part of our experience right now, but share with people who aren't. But I want to circle back to Lucy because she's part of Maine Summer Camps now. And it's not just ACA or ACA New England. I mean, we talked before we started recording down on the Cape, you all have your, you have your own kind of neighborhood sized group of camps in the area where I used to work up in Maine, the Lake Association of, you know, there's all different levels of community around you. I mean, I will say take advantage of the opportunities, whether through they're through ACA New England or your state association or your local network of, of whatever. Human connection, relationships, and you know, in all forms are what make this industry go. Not everybody's going to be in camping forever. We really are a fortunate group because when you see the lights go off in a counselor's eyes or a camper's eyes or even an adult's eyes, sometimes these parents, they drop off their kids and they're like, I want to come back. Can I come back? Because they know that the experience is special. But we also know that there's only a few seats at the table. So it's back to the balance. It's how do we keep growing this table with new people, new faces, new opportunities when we still only have limited seats. And so this is kind of the next evolution, the next wave in camping. And that's why community is going to be so important. Not only the communities that you have, but expanding your communities and growing them and finding out where they intersect. And if somebody wants to intersect with MISA, how would they do that? Whether it's you, your artwork, or anything under the MISA umbrella. I want to pass the talking stick for a second.
Well, I have a social media presence. So my Instagram is my full name, M-I-L-I-S-A, and my last name, G-A-L-A-Z-Z-I, Melissa Galazzi. I also have a Facebook presence, though I post more on Instagram, and I post about all of it. I think of myself as a human educator. My master's degree is in art and education and evaluation and assessment of non-traditional educational programs, CAP. and creative leadership is a huge part of, you know, what I'm about. I've been blessed with a really strong right brain and left brain. You know, I'm very organized. I'm very linear in terms of like my to-do list and my organizational systems, you know,
I'm getting there.
Today. And then I have this really wild right brain that, that is, you know, I think outside the box. I'm wildly dyslexic. And so my dyslexic brain, I didn't learn to read until really the end of fourth grade, beginning of fifth grade, which is very, as you know, very late. Most kindergartners learn how to read fluently. And so, you know, my dyslexic brain is very unique. My neurodiversity allows me to have a lot of benefits. And so I think, so finding me on social media, I also have my personal website is really about my art. So melissagalazzi.com and brewsterdaycamp.com. And the early childhood program is the family schools with an S.com. And I guess I would say the last thing, you know, there was about 3 years when I moved away from being camp director and slid over just to be my mom's daughter and really usher her through the last 3 years of her life. And my mom hired my son, Dan, who you know quite well, to be my replacement at camp. And so that was all in one day. I went from working for my mom to consulting for my son. And sort of ushered him through 3 years of being camp director, which were the COVID years, the COVID 3 years. So that was a wild ride for all of us. And I think that during that time period, while I was consulting with Dan and taking care of my mom and being an artist, I grew a new arm of my creative work, which is called Full Palette, Learn, Teach, Lead. And that is a creative educational consulting arm. I do a lot of teaching and speaking through Full Palette, Learn, Teach, Lead. And the tagline is cultivating creativity and connection for a better world. And I am writing a book that is sort of encompasses all of this. It's been, I got the first draft done in the fall of 2020 and sent it off to my editor, and it was 25,000 words, which is a good solid amount of a book. And she read the whole thing and she said, this is fantastic. It's phenomenal. You could self-publish it and probably 50 or 100 people will read it. Awesome. She's like, but it's a real book. Like, you could really like really write this thing and really have it professionally published. And I was like, great. So how do I do that? And she said, okay, well, you just need to put this aside and start draft number two.
Chopping like, wood, just keep chopping.
Yeah, carry water, chop wood, carry water, chop wood. So I said, I gave you my best. How do I go deeper, wider, more? I don't know. And so for the last 2.5 years, I've been growing sort of, you know, how do you deepen a practice, whatever the practice is, whether it's yoga or leadership or parenting, instead of going an inch deep and a mile wide, you have to flip it and go an inch wide and a mile deep. And that going deep, deep, deep is what I'm doing with the book. So hopefully at some point after I finish managing my mother's estate and taking care of all the other invisible bits and pieces of managing a company and transitioning, it is a living, it's in my studio. I have a studio 900 square feet in an old mill building just north of Providence in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. And it's growing on the wall in post-it notes and dots and like crazy. And one of my sons walked in at one point, like a year ago, he goes, Mom, you look like you're solving a murder mystery.
I was
going
to say how to catch a murderer. No. Yeah. And now I'm upset that I didn't take you up on that offer. And we're not talking amidst, you know, what we will do is next year when we do season two, we'll do another round with Misa. And that year we're going to be adding video. We'll have a YouTube channel going with it live.
Oh, great.
So we'll do it in the more aesthetically pleasing setting. But yeah. I gotta say, if nothing else, if you're listening to this and you're not inspired to go out and do more of the work that we do and inspire children and young adults and yourself and your peers, you know, approach the day with, you know, with good intentions and an open mind. And my personal mantra, and actually, what did you say your full service? What's the tagline?
Full palette, learn, teach, lead.
Learn, teach, lead. But you had a kind of a motto there afterwards.
Oh, yeah. It's cultivating creativity and connections for a better world.
And I want people to take that into the summer, because I think that's a great mantra for the camp experience. I personally go around chanting curiosity, empathy, and respect. I think that's, you know, what you're saying is just an actionable version of that. Like, now go out and do something with it. So you can catch her online. You can probably go to any of those websites or any of those social media handles and shoot her a message. Misa is wildly open to talking about art, camp, life, culture, or anything in the cosmos. She's a wonderful person. Thank you so much for your time. We look forward to talking to you again soon, and give the family and everybody our best.
Thank you, bud. Thanks for having me.